Former Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama and the former First Lady Michelle Obama are among the Washington heavyweights who reacted to the 41st President's death and offered remembrances of his duty and public service. The Obamas said in a statement, "America has lost a patriot and humble servant in George Herbert Walker Bush." President Trump and the First Lady said in a statement, "Melania and I join with a grieving nation to mourn the loss of former President George H.W. Bush, who passed away last night. Bush was also praised by the Dalai Lama, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, the U.S. Naval Air Force, for whom Bush served in World War II, former Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev, and many other religious, business, and political leaders. George H.W. Bush will also be remembered by many in the anti-war movement as the man who made it okay again for the United States to make war on smaller countries, barely 15 years after the end of the disastrous Vietnam War." That's the sound of gunfire during the United States invasion of Panama in December of 1989. The war was brief, but nearly 9,000 died as UN forces sought to capture and overthrow President Manuel Noriega, a former U.S. ally who had refused to take part in the war of the neighboring Sandinista-led government of Nicaragua.
"I took this action only after reaching the conclusion that every other avenue was closed and the lives of American citizens were in grave danger. I hope that the people of Panama will put this dark chapter of dictatorship behind them and move forward together as citizens of a democratic Panama with this government that they themselves have elected."
Bush's press spokesperson, Marlon Fitzwater, announced the invasion on national television and gave what would become the first of a long list of fig leaf excuses for launching American wars overseas: the death of an unnamed U.S. soldier and allegations of cocaine smuggling by Noriega.
"Last Friday, Noriega declared a state of war with the United States. The next day, the PDF shot to death an unarmed American serviceman, wounded another, seized and beat another serviceman, and sexually threatened his wife. Under these circumstances, the president decided he must act to prevent further violence. Our troops will use only the force necessary to achieve the objectives and will be withdrawn as quickly as possible."
But for most who oppose Bush, he may be best remembered not for an invasion, but a groundbreaking negative ad during his campaign for president against Democrat Michael Dukakis, the former governor of Massachusetts. The so-called Willie Horton ad, which put racism front and center in Bush's appeal to voters.
"Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime."
As vice president under Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush's central involvement in the Iran-Contra scandal put a tarnish on his prohibitionist views on drugs. He called for swift arrests of drug users and sellers and basically referred to drug users as enemies of the people. Later, the meme would be picked up by Bill Clinton, who began the U.S. experiment with mass incarceration. Eventually, millions were jailed. In this clip, Bush shows a large bag allegedly filled with crack cocaine.
"This is crack cocaine, seized a few days ago by drug enforcement agents in a park just across the street from the White House. It could easily have been heroin or PCP. It's as innocent looking as candy, but it's turning our cities into battle zones, and it's murdering our children. Let there be no mistake, this stuff is poison."
Bush's self-righteousness took a hit in an interview, though, by CBS anchor Dan Rather. The journalist hammered away at the myriad of connections between Bush and the people named as part of the scandal. Congress, through an investigation led by Senator Tower of Texas, showed that guns had been sold by Iran with U.S. help and with U.S. assistance to the anti-Sandinista Contras in Nicaragua to fuel a covert war in the region.
Now, you've said that if you'd known it was an arms for hostage swap, you would have opposed it. You said the first you knew it was an arms for hostage swap was in December of 1986,
when
correct?
The whole thing became briefed to me by Senator Durenberger.
Exactly.
And the proximity of arms to hostages much closer.
But, Mr. Vice President, you went to Israel in July of 1986,
yes.
And a member of your own staff, Mr. Craig Fuller, has verified, and so did the only other man there, Mr. Neer, Mr. Amaron Neer, who's the Israelis' top anti-terrorist man.
Yes.
Those two men were in a meeting with you, and Mr. Neer not once, but three times underscored with you that this was a straight-out arms for hostage
swap. What they were doing.
Now, how can you reconcile that you were there, Mr. Neer, underscored three separate occasions that it was an arms for hostage swap and told you were dealing with the most radical elements in Iran? You were dealing straight away with the Ayatollah Khomeini.
I was told what they were doing and not what we were doing, and that's the big difference. And Dan, I expressed my concerns and reservations about that. That has been testified to under oath by Mr. Poindexter, and it's been confirmed that I had reservations and spoke up by Don Regan. In fact, he said the other day that I expressed them to the president.
That's correct.
I don't discuss what I talk to the president because there's a principle involved. Nothing to do with Iran-Contra. It's the principle of confidentiality between the president and the vice president.
Mr. Vice President,
yes.
The president himself has said he wants all the facts out. He gave up such things as even his own diary. Every principal, including Secretary Shultz,
he did not give up his own diary.
He gave up some of it.
Well, Dan, let's be careful here because you're.
Yes, sir. I want you to be careful, Mr. Vice President, because
I will be careful.
Admiral John Poindexter was National Security Advisor who was convicted of his involvement in Iran-Contra. He was one of six who were sentenced to prison for their involvement in the affair, who were pardoned by George H.W. Bush, setting a standard for political pardons that are being contemplated by President Donald Trump. And Bush's term wound up with the United States-led coalition attack on Iraq, Iraq President Saddam Hussein's forces, which had invaded Kuwait. That attack left Hussein in power, but set in motion events that led to the second Gulf War and America's current military involvement in the region 30 years later.
Now, the 28 countries with forces in the Gulf area have exhausted all reasonable efforts to reach a peaceful resolution, have no choice but to drive Saddam from Kuwait by force. We will not fail. As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq. We are determined to knock out Saddam Hussein's nuclear bomb potential. We will also destroy his chemical weapons facilities. Much of Saddam's artillery and tanks will be destroyed. Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal. Initial reports from General Schwarzkopf are that our operations are proceeding according to plan.
Margaret Kimberly is senior columnist for Black Agenda Report. She says George H.W. Bush is guilty of crimes he committed long before he became president.
I think it's important for us to acknowledge the role that the president of the United States plays in the world. They are all criminals, some to greater degrees, some to lesser degrees. Actually, George H.W. Bush, his criminality precedes his being in office. Let's not forget this man was director of the CIA, which is inherently criminal, among other things. He covered up the assassination of a Chilean diplomat that took place in Washington, D.C. Orlando Letelier was killed by Pinochet by a car bomb. And as CIA director, he tried to misdirect and make it look like other Chileans were responsible when obviously it was the Chilean government. And he wasn't even president yet. As a vice presidential candidate, it's very probable that Bush was one of the people who prevented Jimmy Carter from getting the hostages out of Iran and therefore prevented Carter from being elected. He has been very cagey, and there have been freedom of information requests from the Secret Service to point out where he was in late October of 1980. Talk about your October surprise. And this is before he became president and invaded Iraq and invaded Panama. and did all of the other, committed all of the other crimes that I've been referencing. Right.
When he gave his drug policy speech as vice president and actually picked up a bag of what he called crack cocaine, which had been seized in the park across the street from the White House, and then he claimed that the cause of the problem, the enemies of the people of the time, were people who used and sold drugs.
Well, yes, he was part of that. You know, the war on drugs, it took off under Reagan and was continued by every president afterwards. The war on drugs was direct response to the Black Liberation Movement. When legal segregation ended, the mass incarceration became the means of keeping Black people under control. So we were told that crack cocaine was worse than powdered cocaine. No, it isn't. It's the same drug, but it was more often the drug of choice for Black users and sellers. So it was painted as being the worst. And we were told the people who used and sold it needed to be punished more harshly than anyone. And we were told about crack babies, who babies can be addicted to any drug, but children whose mothers had used crack weren't damaged more than children whose mothers used other drugs. So, yes, absolutely. He was part of that continuity from Reagan. And then Bill Clinton built upon what he did and put even more people behind bars.
There was a famous interview, which I was listening to and pulled a clip from him and Dan Rather of CBS News, in which Dan Rather asked him about, as he was vice president at the time, of his role in Iran-Contra and how much he knew about arms for hostages. And, of course, that was connected by a lot of investigative reporters to cocaine trafficking at the time as well.
Well, he was deeply involved in Iran-Contra. As I pointed out, it was no mystery why the hostages were released as Reagan was being inaugurated. Bush and others made contact with the Iranian government and prevented them from being released until after Reagan became president. And then his role was he was absolved because he was pardoned by the next president. So all these presidents come into office and then they cover up what the predecessors have done. Because whether they're Democrats or Republicans, there's a consensus. There is a bipartisan consensus about the U.S. role in the world. So none of their crimes, if they can cover up the crimes, they always do.
And then when he became president, one of his first acts in 1989, December 1989, was to go after, to invade Panama.
Well, that was the pretext for invading Panama was that Noriega was a drug dealer. But the U.S. never had any problems with that. They wanted Panama to be their base of operations to attack other Central American nations, and Noriega said no. So this was December 1989. So the U.S. invaded Panama. I believe at one point they claimed that a U.S. soldier was killed, and I remember very well, they never identified the soldier. And, you know, whenever an American soldier is killed overseas, they always say, you know, this is soldier, you know, John Jones or whomever. But this mysterious soldier was never identified. That was not the real reason. They wanted to exercise control of the Panama Canal. And they felt that Noriega was unreliable and that he would not play ball with them. And as you recall, the Panama Canal Treaty was opposed by Republicans. It was something Carter did. Reagan was strongly opposed to it. And that continued through Bush. But they basically wanted to make sure they didn't have any opposition for what they wanted to do in Central America. And 6 to 9, it's estimated, 1,000 people were killed, mostly poor Black people in Panama City. So this was just a classic case of America's imperialism and the old Monroe Doctrine, which said the whole hemisphere belongs to the United States, and the United States has the right to do whatever it wants to do in the region. It's interesting to me that this is almost forgotten. It is nearly 20 years ago, but the media didn't say much. Democrats didn't say much. and he got away with it, and it was quite a terrible, terrible act.
It was a tremendous amount of bloodshed because of the United States involvement, invasion of Panama. It was under and unreported in the United States just how many people were killed. It was sold as the perfect invasion and all that kind of thing. He talks later when he invades Iraq because of Kuwait about the brutality of the Iraqi regime in Kuwait. How does that compare to American brutality in Panama?
All of these occupations and invasions, they always have a pretext. Because they have to sell it to the public. They can't just say that we're bloodthirsty imperialists and want to control as much of the world as possible. That's not going to fly. They know most people want to, Americans especially, want to believe in their goodness. So it's always Noriega was a drug dealer or the Iraqis invaded Kuwait. Now, Kuwait was stealing Iraq's oil. So Iraq had a legitimate grievance against that government. There's always been a question about whether or not the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq at the time, gave Saddam Hussein the go-ahead. So it's always been a question about whether or not she said, yes, it's okay, we don't care. And then when he did it, it was used as a pretext for an invasion. But it was always also part of a larger plan, the Project for a New American Century, which made Israel the undisputed power in the region, and that was done by attacking the secular Arab governments. And the Kuwaits and the Saudi Arabias and the Gulf monarchs of the world went along with it, or indeed helped in certain cases. That first Iraq war was followed by his son's invasion of Iraq, which was followed by overthrowing Gaddafi, which was followed by the attempt to overthrow Assad. It was the first in a larger plan to change the Middle East.
Well, how would you sum up the meaning of George H.W. Bush's 4 years in office as president?
Bush 41 was, as you may recall, he was behind in the polls early in the campaign. He wasn't particularly popular, but he used a very racist tactic, the Willie Horton campaign ads. Willie Horton was he was also, by the way, he was always called William. They turned him into Willie in these ads, who was on furlough. Governor Dukakis released him from prison, and he committed a murder and a rape while he was out. And they used Willie Horton against Dukakis, who did not counter effectively. And basically, he went forward in the polls based on that. But of course, having that as the primary reason that he won the election meant that he came into office as a weaker president. The economy was not doing well towards the end of his term. Clinton was able to win a narrow victory, although he was ultimately the winner. So that is how he was defeated. His son was unpopular in part because of the invasion of Iraq at the end of his term in office. But what they learned from that is not to send U.S. troops to invade. Now they get proxies. They get jihadist proxies. And when Barack Obama said he wasn't against all wars, just dumb wars, that's what he meant. The U.S. still makes wars. They use proxies. They use sanctions to destroy economies, to kill people. They have even new sanctions against Iran and other countries that have been targeted by the U.S. But I think all of these presidents have more in common, especially around the issue of foreign policy, where they're, you know, Democrats and Republicans tend to always agree. If you look at even Bernie Sanders, he is not opposed to U.S. foreign policy for all of his much vaunted liberalism, and he does differ from the Democratic Party establishment in that regard. But when it comes to foreign policy, he's an imperialist too. So that's the kind of continuity we see, and it's the sort of the issue that, to me, turns them all into criminals. And I think we need to have a larger discussion about America's role in the world and what that means.
Margaret Kimberly is senior columnist for Black Agenda Report.